The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Craig Konstantinovich and Cole Hammack. And today we are kind of taking a round two approach to the podcast from last week. We thought there was more to be said, more to talk about. And this conversation today can lean really in toward the emotional aspect of long-term care planning. And its topic is when the paper trail ends, settling a parent's legacy. Losing a parent's hard enough.
For sure.
What happens when you're, left to sort through decades of, financial decisions and business ties and family expectations, and there's no roadmap, no estate planning, no plan at all. So, what happens when the paper trail runs cold? So I'm going to start with, the will. Let's just assume that your dad always said he updated the will. Mm-hmm. And I went through this actually with my father on his third marriage. I found out his will had been changed a couple of different times, and there happened to be part of that will included some inheritance for one of my sisters who was on disability. And so when I saw that, I was very concerned. He said he had updated it. Well, he updated it. He updated it to go half in the direction of his wife's family. So we really had to do some scrambling when he moved in with us and was, having health issues to fix that so that
sure.
my sister,
oh, yeah.
her legacy maintained itself. He had designed that 30 years prior so that, it just kind of swooped in and changed it. So it was kind of a shock. Do you know which one's the final copy? I mean, I had four or five, maybe six wills that went back to the 80s. And, I've always wondered this. Do they store those? Does the attorney store those? Are those filed downtown? What happens with that document?
So should, but it goes back to, is that the last attorney that they worked with? Because a different attorney's office may have a different one or a different so on and so forth. So I don't really know if there's a perfect option to know what the latest one was outside of, this is their understanding of that to be, because the way it works in the will is usually the first lines, this replaces and revokes all prior wills.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's just working through based on the dates you can find, which I'm sure you did, to say, okay, well, this is the latest we have. But even still, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the latest, but that might just be the basis by which to start with.
Where do you start? I mean, do you start with a conversation with your parents when they're in good health? Going
yes,
through that,
always.
Is that where it starts?
Yes. Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Can you kind of show us what that looks like from a CFP's point of view when you're talking to people?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, everyone, no one likes to think about their final days. No one likes to think about their end of being here. So it's not an easy conversation to have. So, I've always joked and said, hey, if you need to blame someone or if you want to point the finger to anyone, I'll take the blame. Say, hey, my financial planner mm-hmm. said I need to have this conversation or I need to be aware of it. Part of the reason is because, to your point, more times than not, you'll get an estate plan drafted up. And again, depending on where you're at in life, you may not touch it for 10, 20, 30 years.
I see it all the time.
Absolutely. The time. And plenty of things happen in life. But again, you never want to, people psychologically, they never want to think about, oh, well, what's going to happen when I'm not here? Doesn't mean that it's not important. They just don't like to think about it. So it's a lot easier to talk about it when things are good. Like even for my dad, for instance. I was in college at the time when he passed. I have two younger brothers. They were in high school. And, everything was organized and set up at that point, thankfully, to say, hey, everything's going to go to my wife. And then if, God forbid, something happens to her, now all of a sudden it's going to go in trust. So we can, I'm sure, trust are a separate conversation entirely here. But just looking at that, okay, well, that's probably a good idea because I mean, we can all look at each other and say, imagine what I would have done with hundreds, if not millions of dollars,
right,
all of a sudden coming into it 22, 23 years old. Probably not the right things.
So that was because of your age that probably that was set up that way?
Yeah. And then, again, from there, you can even go so far as to have it set up because, like you had mentioned, whether it's a family member that has special needs, whether it's another family member that may be at risk of a spendthrift. Like, there's other instances where you may still want that, or maybe you want to disinherit someone. That's another cause where you would say very deliberately, hey, I disinherit this individual. And that may change. Things may adjust over time where that's no longer appropriate, but you always want to talk when things are good because that's when most people are open to having general conversations. When you're in the thick of it, whether it be dementia, Alzheimer's, whether it be a life-threatening illness or injury, the last thing you want to be thinking about is, oh my gosh, do I have my beneficiaries properly aligned? Are my wishes still properly set up? Who do I want to make these medical decisions? That's if that's your estate plan, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, because I think oftentimes it unfortunately ends up being that deathbed conversation, but it absolutely needs to happen a lot sooner than that.
So sure. you have your ducks in a row, but you haven't told your kids or your loved ones, you know, whoever it is that's successing, you know, in succession, where the documents are. And I've experienced this too, where someone said, well, there's a will. Well, I can't find it. I don't know where it is. Well, it's in this drawer to the left of that paper. Yeah, it's not there. So where is it?
It's in the safe, but you don't know the combination to the safe,
right,
kind of thing. Oh, yeah.
So it's really important not just to have the conversation, but to tell your loved ones where things are.
Yeah,
absolutely.
What folder they're in,
yep,
and
how to
what
access. And we'll even suggest sometimes providing copies if they're comfortable with that.
Oh, yeah.
So that way it's not a digging through stuff after the fact because that may still be raw, but to have those documents on file where that's the last thing we need to worry about is very helpful too.
And in those instances too where it's, you know, unfortunately maybe it's just one or the other and not both spouses that are participating. I mean, we even open our doors to say, well, bring in the person that's going to be carrying out your wishes, whether it be the trustee or the executor or executrix. Like, we don't want the first time that we interact to be that cold, hey, so-and-so just passed. What do we need to do here? We want it to be somewhat of a warm reception at that point. Hey, it's a pleasure to meet you. Here's, you know, kind of where things are at, if the client's comfortable with that and sharing that information. But at the end of the day, yeah, you want to try to get involved and aware of what's out there. Maybe not know all of the dollars and cents, but, you know, hey, if they have a life insurance policy, if they've got bank accounts, if they've got investment accounts, like,
oh, yeah,
you need to know about it so you know who to contact, because who to contact's one thing. Actually getting the right information to get monies distributed as are needed, that's an entirely separate ball of wax.
You just made me think of something. So passwords, you know, whether it's, you know, the safe deposit box or the safe downstairs or passwords to your investment accounts. We talk a lot about making sure that you're storing those properly or consolidating those in one place. Mm-hmm. I have a spreadsheet where I have all my accounts, what kind of accounts they are, the website, the password, the user, all that on one spreadsheet.
Yeah.
But I always feel like that's, like I should have a paper copy of it somewhere. But it, you know, it would be.
Well, the question is, God forbid something happens to you, Tracy, does Jay know how to access that?
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about where's the will, what's the latest version, where to find those things. So who holds the key to the vault? So who has access to digital and physical documents, bank accounts, deeds, investment accounts, passwords, and safe deposit boxes? Have you actually figured out, you know, who you want to hold those things? And that's where the emotion comes in when you've got, you know, multiple parties, whether they're kids or family members involved in the estate planning. Moving into assets like untangling assets that are held in trusts or LLCs, partnerships and that sort of thing. And I'm reading this because this is not my milieu. Assuming that, you know, did you know your mom's name was still on three LLCs, for instance? You know, if you're a business owner, if you've got, you know, an entrepreneur background and you've got, you know, your fingers in different types of businesses, how do people navigate those ownership structures?
Yeah, so are we talking before or after a parent passes at this point?
I think after, you know, we're going to stick to sort of after somebody.
Sure.
Yeah, after somebody passes away, you know, how do you kind of take the broom and the dustpan and go in and figure out where it is?
So if if, for example, we don't have anything necessarily indicating where things are, but we know maybe mom was involved or dad was involved in a type of business, starting at the Secretary of State level, understanding what sort of entities mom, dad, whomever may have been engaged in is a great resource.
So an average person can write to the Secretary of State office?
There's a website for it. Some states may look a little bit different than others, but Ohio, for example, is pretty user-friendly. So you'd be able to search by name, by address, wherever, in order to actually start to drill down and say, okay, well, what's out there or what has been out there? And then that's a good baseline to say, okay, well, this is what I need to start working with or look into further. Is that something that even exists anymore?
Is that just for businesses, business structures, or is that for like any kind of account?
Yeah, that'd be for business structures. Okay. And then the extension to that would be, okay, well, let's take a look at the tax returns. Mm-hmm. So the tax return is going to be a great tool to say, okay, well, what's actually earning income for mom or for dad? So that goes back to knowing the experts. So hopefully if they're working at that level, there's a CPA involved. So we can communicate with the CPA to say, okay, well, can I get copies of the 23 or 24, whatever year tax returns? And then start working through, okay, well, this is what was open. This was the revenue. What does this mean as we look forward? And then you can start to look for opportunities to whether that's to close that up or if parents no longer engaged, is that just pretty much automatically closed because they're not activating or being active within the business? So I think the conversation really comes down to what type of business, where is it, and then what do we do from there?
And we're not attorneys, but how do you approach the credit bureaus? Is it wise to get a copy of the credit report from all the credit bureaus if you're not sure about credit cards or loans or those kinds of debt?
Yeah, I mean, it never hurts. You got to make sure that you can get that information. But, I mean, the biggest piece is we're looking at all this here, too, is, like Cole said, we've got to leverage the experts. So, like, the credit bureaus, understanding maybe the day-to-day bills, hey, that may all be disclosed in a bank account statement, for instance. You may see, and I'm just pointing out names here, not saying, hey, endorsements or anything, but let's say someone had a Capital One card. Well, you'll see very clearly a monthly transaction of, hey, thanks for your payment. Here's this or here's that. To your point, really the credit bureau or the credit report would show maybe were there any delinquent loans that were out there, maybe something that wasn't paid. You know, again, we always like to assume that people are in good financial standing, but that's not always the case. So that would show you more so, okay, well, let's say they had a student loan that they took out 15 years ago, but they only made payments up until 2020, and then they never resumed payments. Well, if that's delinquent, that's going to be part of the estate. But to Cole's point, when it comes to any kind of business or anything else, I mean, assuming you have the will, the first place that you want to work with, whoever the drafting attorney is for that latest version of the will, you want to contact them. You want to contact their CPA if you know who is filing their tax returns or any of those informations. And that's why we always say it's better to have these conversations when things are good, because as soon as you know the cast of characters, now it becomes that much more thorough, that much more efficient for you. So that way, let's say they did have a business. Well, the business attorney and the estate attorney may be two very different people. And if that's the case, one may not know what the other has going on. So to bring everyone to the table and say, okay, well, they had this business. If it was a partnership, for instance, you would hope or be optimistic that there would be details on how the business would be valued and whoever passed, how they would be bought out, for lack of a better phrase. An attorney will help you do that, but the business attorney represents the business entity, whereas the estate attorney, that's going to represent the individual. And those two may have different ideas on how a business or how a hard-to-value asset may truly be valued. So that's where you've got to get them conversing, get them going back and forth, because you want to make sure that you're doing what's fair, what's right, and what's reasonable. But at the same time, the business owner still needs to make sure that the business can continue if that's the intent.
Is there a jurisdiction or an organization that you can contact to find out if there are investment accounts that you're not aware of? Short of watching the mail and email, what if there's something lingering out there? Is there a way you can, like, you know, an organization you can call or contact to find that out?
I don't know if there's an immediate option. I'd love for there to be. I know retroactively there's an unclaimed fund sites that's available. So again, another state-based thing. But essentially, if they try to contact you, can't for however long, eventually things just settle into that pool with the state. So you need to reach out, file a claim as the estate, and that's something you can eventually resolve, but that could take
after
time.
After the fact.
Yeah.
And you have to be the executor to do that, or power of attorney, don't you, to do that?
You have to be able to confirm your ownership and why you are requesting information on someone else's behalf. Yes. Yeah. I mean, theoretically, there's going to be at some point here, thanks to Secure Act 2.0, there should be a database for abandoned or retirement accounts for individuals mm-hmm. that may not have been consolidated, you may not be aware of, whatever the case may be. We don't know when that's going to be available, exactly. but it's supposed to be coming. So hopefully that will help out. But again, that's going to be something that happens in the future, not here presently.
Okay. Let's review the unspoken costs of burial, legacy, and people's expectations. So, you know, was there ever a conversation about how somebody wanted to be remembered and how much time you want to spend doing it? So planning for funeral, memorial expenses, family expectations, those kinds of things. What kind of things come to mind when I bring that up?
I think just having the conversation, and it keeps coming back to that, but mm-hmm. what do you want to have happen? Right? Because you'd have all the good intentions in the world, but if mom or dad wanted to have an open casket and a showing and then be buried versus cremation, better to have that out in the open and actually plan for that versus, well, after the fact, then just always kind of wondering, right? So having what we would call a letter of last instruction, basically, where I'm gone, here's what I want to have happen, here's what kind of funeral I want, whether buried, cremated, including who to even reach out to. I think having something a little more formalized like that can go a long way.
And depending on where you're at in your plan, too, there's a lot of people now that have, as they call it, death insurance, basically a life insurance policy that's meant to cover any kind of final expenses. So, again, that's something that's been coming around. People are more familiar with, can certainly be built into your plan. But, yeah, I mean, burial plots, headstones, I mean, that's mm-hmm. never cheap. Cremation is certainly isn't something either. And then to Cole's point, instructions, I mean, there's been any number of examples that you could draw from, but one person in particular that I think of, they had said, here's a sum of money. I want you to go to my favorite vacation spot that I shared with you, and here the trip is paid for. Mm-hmm. So you can even use examples like that. So it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. You can find some happiness, some enjoyment out of that.
So the debt that's in disguise, you know, people, I've heard a lot of conversation back and forth going through this myself, not with you guys, but trying to determine what, you know, what's left behind and what is my responsibility if I'm mm-hmm. if I'm the admin or the executor or the power of attorney. And maybe this is a question more for an attorney, and we aren't attorneys, say it again, but how is someone supposed to handle after the fact the surprise credit card debt or the business loans or the signed guarantees that pop up after a funeral?
If I recall correctly, and again, attorney, you want to work with one. I think as far as debtors, they have something like 6 months in order to reach out to stake a claim against an estate. So in essence, unless you know where everything is, you probably don't want to try to wrap things up as quickly as possible. Because if you do that, we disperse the funds to family members, whomever. That's how we can run into some issues. If that debtor comes a few months later to say, hey, nope, sorry, mom owed on this credit card, we want to dip into that. The important thing, and I think we might have referenced this last time, is generally those debtors can't come after you, though. So again, you still have to resolve it at the state level. But if there's an unpaid debt, they probably can't come after a family member for that. But again, work with the attorney to figure out what those specifics are, should you or should you not make a payment, so that way you're not on the hook for it.
How does somebody handle cryptocurrency?
Oh,
that would
get me fired up here.
I mean, I remember conversations at the very beginning about how important it is to have a password. But, you know, mm-hmm. with something like that, and I don't really want to get into a cryptocurrency conversation right. specifically. But
well, you like, opened the door, miss.
Digital assets like yeah. crypto. I mean, I don't know anything about it. Is that just a password that you have to be able to get in? I mean, is there a jurisdiction or over that type of area or no?
So cryptocurrency at its base level, at its fundamental being, it's meant to be anonymous. So you are not going to get access to it unless there is a way for you to access the wallet, the account, anything else of that nature. So
crypto doesn't have a beneficiary or TOD or anything
nope.
like that?
Right.
Wow.
Now that's, again, one of the big kind of wild, wild west things with it and why some of those other newer platforms are trying to get some beneficiaries. But, I mean, again, by its nature, you're not supposed to know who owns what. I mean, there's any number of articles about so-and-so passed with Bitcoin amount of XYZ or Ethereum of ABC or whatever, and that money's just gone.
Without the password.
Without the password, okay. Yep.
And that's, you know, circling back the stored data, the passwords mm-hmm. and users for all the accounts are kind of what we're talking about. So talking about tax time, federal and state estate tax deadlines.
Say that 10 times fast.
I know, right? Inheritance tax planning and filing logistics. How does that, and we're not CPAs, but is that, so is the first next step just to contact the accountant and work with the accountant, or is there some, you know, road that you need to approach beforehand?
That's absolutely it. And just understanding where you are too, because every state law is a little bit different. That's why it's so important to work with that CPA, because like Pennsylvania, for example, they have an inheritance tax. That's not something we have to worry about here in Ohio. But to plan to have that 4% or whatever it is to carve out for the inheritance piece is important. So, yeah, you
especially
don't want to try to do that
business
alone.
Owner,
for anybody.
Yeah. For anyone. Because, yeah, the inheritance tax is not necessarily based off of which asset. It's how much you inherit. So if it's a flat 5% of
life
what you inherit,
anything.
For instance, yeah, like that money can add up very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of family business, what happens to the family business after death?
Depends on the family business.
Bingo, yeah. Everyone's favorite answer, it depends. But, again, that's where talk about things when they're good. Mm-hmm. One of the most important things that we have to draw up is, okay, well, what is the business succession plan? I've said it many times, and I always joke with people when they say, oh, I think I want to start this business. Well, then what's your end game with it? What do you want out of this? Because to your point, let's say there's a family business and it's been run for 50 years. We're on our third generation of ownership, and that owner just unfortunately passes very early on. Well, they may have a young family, so you don't have someone that can immediately step in and keep that family tradition growing. You may not want to sell it to a new individual, but that may be the only way that your family legacy continues. Well, how do you evaluate who's going to come in and find the right person to run it? It's one of those things where if you're reacting when someone's either facing a life-threatening item or after someone's passed, and that's when you address it, it's too late. You've already missed the ball.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that you don't make any major decisions after death for about 6 months. Is that something that you guys have heard also? It's a good rule of thumb.
Advocate for
any major life event, absolutely.
So is that when you kind of start deciding when it's time to sell the house and clear out the closets? Is that the safe sweet spot, or is it subjective?
It's.
I was going to say, you want to say it or you want me to say it, Cole?
It depends.
Bingo.
So the stuff you generally have a little bit more leeway with, because that's not so much an estate thing. So going in with family, figuring, okay, well, who gets mom's jewelry or who gets dad's CD collection, whatever it is, kind of thing. That's something that when you're open to actually going through that, I don't think there necessarily needs to be a hard timeline for that. But when it gets to the larger assets. So when you reference the house or the cars, the bank accounts, things like that, just with reference to the estate piece and debt and making sure you have an understanding of where everything is, you probably shouldn't rush that piece. So 6 months, I don't think that's unreasonable.
And to that point, it doesn't even necessarily have to be, you know, we'll use the house as the example. We may know that we want to sell the house. Let's get the cash from the house. So that way we don't have the ongoing expense of the house, that we don't have to heat it. It doesn't fall into disarray. You know, all of a sudden there aren't squatters that come in. Again, who knows? But to get the actual money out of the house and wait to decide what to do with it. Do I pay off my mortgage? Do I invest this money immediately? Do I, to Cole's point, there may still be creditors that are coming. There may be other things that are happening here. So to grab the cash, put it somewhere safe, and wait on how you deploy that cash, that may be a more logical route.
Sounds to me like the general theme are two things. Lots of conversation and very efficient planning, which requires the experts, the CFPs, the attorneys, the CPAs. I've been through this many times, and it's amazing to me people will fight over a pot with a hole in it.
Yep.
Like they'll go to the death over it. It's
insane. It can really bring out the
worst in people. Whether you have a large wealth built up or nothing at all. People are just inclined, some of them, I'm not that way, but they're going to they're going to pick over the dumbest stuff. So put your plan in line. The moral story is it's legacy is not an automatic function. In other words, you've got to start now and get ahead of it. Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah,
we hope you enjoyed this. And that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. And don't forget to share with your friends.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.